different aspects of it. Basically, I guess I would just motivate as opposed to jump right into it. What we really want to do, if we want to build a fault tolerant quantum computer, we want to be able to characterize the noise that we actually have in physical devices that we build. That is because, in particular, in the factual proofs, there are assumptions about the noise that are very particular. And in fact, the values, different values for the different thresholds, depend a lot on which models are taken, whether the errors are local or correlated or Markovian. So far, the approach, if we have some CP map, some channel that's acting on our states, the approach experimentally has been to fully characterize the CP map. So that if we have a cross decomposition for the CP map and we decompose this in a poly basis, it's very easy to see that we actually have an exponential number of parameters to fully describe this channel. So really, there's no hope of doing a full characterization for even a moderately large quantum computer, let's say 30 qubits, 40 qubits. But what I'll talk about today is techniques where you can actually get a lot of information out of your physical or experimental setup without doing full tomography. In particular, you can estimate the average fidelity of this gate with of this channel with the identity in particular. So if you have a general unitary or a general set of gates that you want to apply, you just have to do essentially motion reverse or compose these gates in such a way that you simulate the identity. You can also estimate the probability of getting poly errors of a certain weight up to a constant weight. And can also test some other properties of the channel, for example, whether you can observe some types of non-Markovian behavior in the noise. And you can even search for some noiseless subsystems and unitarily correctable subsystems. So really, a good starting point is to look at the case of the average gate fidelity. Of course, this is a standard way to evaluate how close some CP map is to a desired unitary. In particular, if we have the case where we have a CP map lambda that is supposed to approximate the identity channel, this average gate fidelity is just defined as the average fidelity between the input psi and the output, which is the output of lambda channel. And you average over the Haar measure for all input states. Equivalently, what you can do is fix the input state to be, for example, the L0 state, and consider the Haar average over all preparation unitaries. And then what you do is you prepare some random state, send it through the channel, and you compare with that same random state that you prepare, ideally. In principle, this would be enough to efficiently estimate this average gate fidelity. It would be enough to be able to sample these unitaries, these random unitaries over the Haar measure. Except that, of course, that's hard to do, and you don't want to have to implement random unitaries in the lab. So what you can do is you consider two designs that are essentially a discretization of this integral into a sum, and a sum over a particular set of unitaries. And this is precisely what we call two designs, this set of unitaries that has this property that the average over this discrete set is equal to the integral over the Haar measure. And just a technicality, we call it two design, just because of the order of the polynomial that we're estimating here on the integral. Now, in particular, for this case, it turns out that the Clifford tensor product of single qubit Clifford gates is a two design. So if you perform this average over random Clifford gates, you can estimate this fidelity efficiently. And all you have to do experimentally is prepare the all zero state, send it through the channel, but now this average channel. So basically what you do is you perform a random Clifford, send it through the physical channel that you want to characterize, undo the Clifford's, and measure in the computational basis. And all you have to do now is estimate what's the probability that you are in the all zero state at the end and the probability that you're not at the all zero state. So this is just a binary outcome. The overhead, the number of experiments that you need to get this fidelity with good precision is independent of the number of qubits. But now, what if we consider the average channel that includes these Clifford operations as opposed to just trying to estimate the fidelity? Well, turns out that if you do, and in particular now I also consider random permutations of the qubits that are undone, as well as the Clifford's around the channel, if you take the whole expression, which averages over this entire symmetry group now that's generated by the Clifford's and the permutations, what you find is that any CP map now will be taken to an average map that has this particular structure here, which essentially means that with some probability PW, you're going to act with poly operators of wave W uniformly. Okay. So equivalently, I can just write any of these Clifford twirl channels as in this sort of super operator basis, okay? Where now I only have n plus one parameters. I only have these probabilities of different waves, okay? And these PWs, if you consider the original decomposition of the operator sum in the poly basis, these are just correspond to these sums of the diagonal elements of the chi matrix. So now I have a linear number of parameters in the number of qubits. So there's actually hope of estimating all these guys. But how do we actually go about that without doing something like tomography, where we try to invert the action of the channel? Well, one thing to note is that, well, first of all, I mean, this average channel here, like I pointed out, this is a poly channel. And poly channels have the property that poly operators are eigenoperators of these channels. So, and in particular, because of the symmetries of this average channel where I had all permutations and all the Clifford's, the eigenvalue, so if I have some poly channel that I sent through, some poly operator that I sent through the average channel, I find that it's just going to be scaled by some real number. And this real number is going to depend only on the weight of the poly operator. It's not going to depend on any other details of the poly operator. So that I can decompose that average channel now in a different way, which is essentially like a diagonal decomposition of the channel, where just we have the degenerate eigenvalues, and we have a superoperator that corresponds to projecting the input states into the composition of these polys that have this eigenvalue. And you can very easily show that the relationship between these eigenvalues and those probabilities in the previous slide are just given by this linear matrix. It's an isomorphism, and you just have this linear transformation between the two that's given by nothing but the inner product of these superoperators in the usual space. In principle, of course, this would be very ugly to calculate because you have these exponentially large matrices as well. But it turns out that the matrix is described very simply just by combinatorial factors. And in fact, you know what the inverse looks like without having to do numerical inversion. So then the protocol then to extract the parameters of this channel consists of, first of all, estimating what these eigenvalues are. Because once you know what these eigenvalues are, you can get probabilities back from this linear transformation. So what you do is you send some poly operator of a particular weight, or send various different poly operators of a particular weight to estimate what C for that weight is. Because of the symmetries of the channel, it doesn't matter which guys you send, so you can just always send, let's say, the tensor product of Zs, poly Zs, with weight W. But of course, we can't send, these are not states, right? These are not positive operators. So what you do in reality on a quantum computer is you prepare the all zero states, you estimate what is the expectation value of this operator, okay? You send it through the channel, and you estimate the expectation value of the same operator again, and you calculate the ratio of these expectation values, and that corresponds to essentially seeing how this observable scale. One of the nice features of this is that, especially on a quantum computer where you have projective measurements, you don't need to do the permutation explicitly. All you have to do is prepare the state, this permutation invariant, so you don't have to do the permutation. And then at the output, you just project each qubit individually in the eigenbasis, and you throw away information about which qubits came out as 1, which ones came out as 0. You just take information about the parities now of random subsets, random subsets of W qubits. And by using a similar approach, Chernoff bound and union bound, you can show that now you only have a logarithmic overhead over the number of experiments that you have to do to get some particular precision delta. But that is for the eigenvalues of the channel. So now we have, some of us have implemented this in NMR, in particular in a three-spin system in solid-state NMR. And the channels that they were characterizing were two different time suspension sequences, or two different decoupling sequences, where the only difference between the two sequences was the spacing between the pulses. The length of the sequences were the same. And so in red here, you see that these are the sequence where the spacing was 10 milliseconds. And in blue, it's a sequence of 5 milliseconds. And you can tell immediately from these plots, these are essentially the projections into each one of the two parameter planes. You can see immediately for P0 that we have an improvement from 0.4 to 0.8. And because P0 corresponds to the average fidelity of the channel, immediately you can see that fidelity improved significantly by using a larger number of pulses in the sequence. Moreover, you can even, the NMR guys were able to spot, because of the symmetries of the molecule itself, you can tell that the probability of a single error is significantly larger than the probability of two errors and three errors. In the case of three, you can't actually even see the line because it's so small. And this, for that molecule, that just corresponded to the fact that one of the spins is coupled more strongly to these other sort of, to the bath of hydrogen spins, I believe. But the important thing to note here from this NMR experiment is that this is scalable in NMR, even though pseudo-pure preparation so far with current technology is not scalable. Because in NMR, in order to estimate these observables, you don't need to do pseudo-pure state preparation. So even for NMR, this protocol is scalable. And it also highlights the fact that it's very robust against depolarization errors in the preparation and the measurement, because we essentially factor out, in NMR in particular, I mean, these polarizations are almost exponentially small. But you can still tell the difference and characterize your channel. But what is, if we know that we can characterize the eigenvalues efficiently, but what about the probabilities? In order to see that, what you have to do is calculate how the variance of these probabilities, estimates of the probability scales. And that just boils down to calculating having the covariance matrix for the estimates of the eigenvalues and computing this quantity. Now, this, of course, depends on the details of covariance and how the estimates are done. But what we can do is take a worst-case approach and consider a worst-case sort of covariance, and we get these expressions, which just from, properties of these matrices, we know that the values are bounded by 1 or minus 1. We can simplify. And it's easy to show that the variance for in the estimate of the probability of weight W actually grows exponentially with W, which is, of course, very bad. And it means that with the polynomial overhead, with the polynomial number of experiments, we can only estimate these probabilities up to a constant weight. So for example, we can estimate this probability of getting errors up to weight 4 or 5 with a reasonable overhead. But more importantly for a fault-tolerant quantum computation community is what kind of questions can we ask about the more general properties of the error model. In particular, we can think of these Clifford swirl channels as throwing away information about precisely what kinds of errors happen and keeping only information about the weights of the errors. So that if you have a channel that you have independent error locations, once you do this averaging, the channel that you get effectively is a tensor product of the horizon channels. So that the eigenvalues, because the eigenvalues of the deep horizon channel are degenerate, the eigenvalues of this larger channel over the n qubits should follow this exponential law, where you know that the eigenvalue corresponding to Pauli operators of weight w are just the w power of the eigenvalue of Pauli operators of weight 1. And if you perform an experiment, you estimate all these eigenvalues, and you see statistically significant deviations from this exponential law, you know that there are correlations in the error locations of your model. Of course, you cannot say that your errors are, that the error locations are independent precisely because they'll require infinite accuracy, but you can definitely point out cases, some cases that are correlated. And that, of course, brings up the question of what are there other simple conditions that we can derive from threshold theorems and apply to either the few number of probabilities that we have or to all the eigenvalues that we can estimate efficiently. And what else can we do with these guys? Well, we can actually observe some types of non-Markovian behavior in the noise. In particular, because these average channels are Pauli channels and they share same eigenvectors, once you compose these channels, all you have to do is multiply the corresponding eigenvalues to see what the eigenvalues of the composed channel should be. So from the Markovian condition, where we know that a channel acting for some time TA plus TB should be equivalent to the channel acting for some time TA composed of the channel acting for some time TB. This translates to this simple condition for the eigenvalues of a composed channel. So if we perform an experiment for these two different times separately, and then we actually go and compose the twirl channels and estimate the eigenvalues for the composed channel, if there is significant deviations from this sort of composition law for the eigenvalues, again, we know that there is non-Markovian behavior in the noise. And of course, there's a lot of, it's possible that the non-Markovianness of the original channel, the untwirled channel, has been washed away by precisely the averaging that we had done. So there's no particular reason why we stick to Clifford, to averaging over the Clifford group and the permutations. They actually consider smaller symmetry groups, and that might allow us to see a larger set of non-Markovian behavior. But because we can also consider different symmetry, smaller symmetry groups, we can consider, for example, twirling over the Pauli group as opposed to twirling over the entire Clifford group. And what you find is that you get the average channel that you get is going to be, again, some Pauli channel, but it's going to have slightly different structure, where now the probabilities depend only on the number of x's, number of y's, the number of z's in the Pauli decomposition, but it doesn't depend on anything else. And we still have only a polynomial number of parameters, so this is good. It's manageable. We can estimate these eigenvalues efficiently with a polynomial overhead, logarithmic overhead in N. But the interesting feature of these channels now with this different symmetry is that you can actually find eigenvalue plus or minus 1 for non-trivial Pauli operators. That means that now we're going to have it is possible that we find channels that have that preserve non-trivial polyoperators. Because these channels are also unital channels, we know that the fixed point set of unital channels coincides with the set, well, with the noise commutant, so that knowing what the fixed point set is allow us to find these noiseless subsystems. And because these observables that we find in the fixed point set are polys, and we know that they have very well known commutation relations, we can try to find noiseless subsystems without having to deal with exponentially large matrices. And we can even find, for noiseless subsystems, we have to concentrate on eigenvalue plus one. But if we allow ourselves to do, for example, unitary operations to recover the information, we can also consider eigenvalues minus one, which allow us to find possibly larger noiseless encodings. Because we're dealing essentially just with poly channels and poly noise for the average channel, we know that any noiseless subsystem that we find for this average channel is also going to be a noiseless subsystem for the original unswirled channel, just because this channel is in the linear span of these error operators for the average channel. Experimentally, of course, we're never going to be able to observe eigenvalue once. In our estimates, there's always going to be some error bars. So what you should do is try to find operators that have eigenvalue close to one, and then go back to the original channel and estimate the average fidelity efficiently, and try to verify whether it really is a noiseless encoding or not. In summary, basically what I wanted to show you guys is that there's a lot of information that can be extracted efficiently from these channels, and there's a lot that can be learned about noise in experimental settings without having to do full tomography, so that there's actually hope of learning useful information about reasonably large quantum computers. For the purpose of fault tolerance and quantum computation, I showed a few steps in the direction of tests that we can perform that are directly relevant to conditions for threshold theorems. But there's still a number of open questions. For example, can we try to quantify these estimates of how close we are to these conditions just by using these probabilities or the eigenvalues? Are there also more general conditions for these eigenvalues that we can find? And are there any other different symmetry groups that we consider that will give us more information that's relevant? Thank you.
If you looked at a second order correlation function instead of just the fidelity, would you be able to actually characterize a non-Markovian channel rather than just saying that it's there?
By second order, you mean instead of the average fidelity, like a variance of the fidelity or something like that? I don't know. I'm not sure.
What would be a representation? I don't know of any like hierarchical conditions for characterizing a degree of non-Markovian. Is it polycorrelation functions? Operators of varying degree, or what would that be?
If you think about it in terms of, for example, time convolutionless expansion, or it's a systematic perturbation expansion, where you're looking for generators of the time convolutionless kernel. So you'd be looking for the second order kernel.
Want to reread?
Any questions?